Fargo, the new virtual assistant from Wells Fargo, makes banking faster and easier. Like this.
Fargo, what's my checking account routing number?
And this.
Fargo, turn off my debit card.
And this.
Fargo, what did I spend on groceries last month?
And that's just the beginning. Do you, Fargo? You can. In the Wells Fargo mobile app. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/getFargo.
Terms and conditions apply. Your mobile carrier's availability and message and data rates may apply. Wells Fargo Bank N.A. member FDIC.
Every day, we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you are ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Good day, everyone. Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Mappy Davis. Thanks so much for joining us. Many of you digging the Delia's episode we just put up last week. Glad you're liking it. She was a treat to speak with, as I mentioned. And I have so much stuff in the can, you guys. I actually just counted 28. There are 28 current interviews in the can. I've actually done more than that, but some have moved down the list so much that they're in the not going to use pile. No offense to those people. It's just not going to happen because now we've got so much in the can that the ones that were okay move from the pile to the probably not going to use pile. So if you do the math on 28, a year is 52, slightly less than half a year's worth if I go one a week. I got to start doing two a week like we talked about. And even then, that's a good 3+ months. So there's a ton in the can. I'm working on getting you more and more. Keep suggesting them to me, making the introductions if you know them. And if you don't, just throw it out there. Hey, do you know this guy? I'd love for you to talk to this guy or whoever. Just make the suggestion is what I'm saying. And if you have a hookup connection to that person, even better. On today's episode, Ursula Undress from the Atlanta School of Burlesque. We are going with her stage name because that is what she wanted to go with. So you may know her in real life, and if you do, great. But I met her as that, and that's what we're going with. I am as curious as anyone as to how that world works, how it works as a performer, how it works as a business. And it's a cool thing in Atlanta, and those three things together make for a good episode. So I talked to her. I went over to the actual studio right there in the Village, East Atlanta Village, which many of you, of course, know about. So I think that's about it. I think let's just dive right into it. Ursula and I actually did have this conversation several weeks ago. So trying to catch all these up with you. I hope you enjoy. Away we go.
Test, test.
All right, cool. So are we going to get your actual name or no? If we don't, that's fine. I'm totally okay with it.
I'd rather not.
Okay.
I guess, yeah.
Okay.
I like to keep my world separate.
No, I understand.
Part, yeah.
Okay. So you don't have to like eat it, but you have to like bring it a little closer.
Okay.
There you go.
Like that. Okay.
So do you want to say where you're from? Can we say where you're from?
Sure. Like originally?
Sure.
From Texas.
Okay.
Like Houston, Texas.
Okay. What brought you here?
Well, my husband's job. My husband works at Tech.
Okay.
So,
And how long have you been here?
Let's see. This January, it will be 10 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And how long have you been doing this?
Almost 9 years.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And did you have like straight jobs beforehand?
No.
You've never worked a straight job?
Well, I mean, I did. I worked, I'm older than most people. Well, I would have most people know. So I've had regular jobs, and I have a degree in graphic design. But when I moved here, that was harder to do because SCAD is here and
right.
There's a lot more competition. So I have done some corporate work in that, but not, it's all been pretty much contract.
Right.
So, yeah.
And they don't let you have your hair like that?
No one's really ever cared.
Really?
The last corporate job I had, I kind of straightened up the way I looked, I guess, to get the job. But once I got in, they didn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. They knew what I did. I mean, they knew about the burlesque thing. They didn't care about that either.
Well, so. Not even that. Just, I mean, like in general, because like my friend actually got a job and he's got a few tattoos and like he doesn't have a sleeve or anything. He's just has a few tattoos. And they're like, yeah, he's going to have to, he told me he's going to have to cover them up. I'm like, really? In 2017?
Oh, yeah. No, I can't cover mine up. Not all of them.
Right. But it's like, I just am kind of amazed. Like, especially like the job that he's doing. Like,
right.
I mean, I won't even get into it, but it's like, I can't think of any jobs where it really matters anymore.
Right.
But even still, I just thought, like, I'm a very rare... So I'm 45 years old with no tattoos. I'm the only one I know.
Wow.
Like,
wow. Yeah.
No one I know younger than me doesn't have a tattoo.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And maybe a lot of... Maybe
well,
some,
I'm the same age, so...
Maybe some... Are you the same age as me?
Yeah.
You look way better than 45 than I do. I mean, I think I look relatively young, but I would have never guessed that.
Yeah.
And I'm not just saying that because you're sitting...
Oh, thanks. ...in front of me. Yeah, no, I know that I think I know people who work in medical that they are allowed to have a bunch of tattoos and piercings and stuff, but they have to have a natural hair color.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because that's what's going to freak out.
I don't know. It could be a thing that it could get mistaken if, you know, because people lose hair and all stuff all the time. Who knows? I've just heard that.
Could be mistaken?
Like a purple hair could get mistaken for something else if you're in surgery, I guess, or if you're, I don't know. I don't even know.
Like
I'm
it could be like a suture?
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Okay. I do want to ask you about that tattoo in particular.
Oh, sure. Hi, Betty.
What do you want to say about it?
I got her. Nicole Nedley did her, or now Nicole Willingham. She is a co-owner of Apocalypse in Buckhead. Her husband, Ryan, is doing the tattoo I have on my thigh. She's done three of my tattoos, but I got this when I found out that I was going to perform at the documentary premiere here. So, I mean,
her documentary?
Yeah.
Okay.
Betty Page Reveals All.
Right.
That one. Yeah. So, I'd always wanted one and I've loved Betty for years. I had the hairstyle for like 20 years. This past year I decided to cut all my hair off just to see what would happen. And my husband keeps asking me if I'm going to go back to having my hair because he misses it. But yeah, so I got it sort of to commemorate that. And so it's the one I get the most comments on.
Well, I would imagine
so. I had to actually have her add the signature because when I had the hair, people would ask me all the time.
If it
was me. And I was like, why would anyone get a tattoo of themselves?
Ask Steve-O. You know who he is?
No.
From Jackass?
No.
So, do you ever watch Jackass?
No.
Are you familiar with the concept?
I am.
So, Steve-O, who's possibly the most loony of them all, got a massive tattoo of himself on his back because if you're one of those guys that does
Jackass stuff.
Jackass stuff. That's a pretty jackass. I mean, it's fucking massive. It's the size of his whole back.
Wow.
Yeah. So, anyhow. but yeah, that's interesting that people would be like...
Everywhere. Even now, even with her name there, they will still ask. Even with my hair like this, they'll ask me if it's me.
Right.
I don't understand. Well, I don't look anything like that now, but, you know, I get it all the time.
It's okay. So how does one get into that world?
Into burlesque?
Yeah. You in particular.
Well, I got in... I started looking it up when we were moving here. I wanted to get into something. I didn't know anybody moving here. I have a couple of friends from high school who live here. And, you know, I wanted to kind of find my people. You know, when I lived in Texas, I was in the burner community. And so I had a lot of friends there. And then I moved to Chicago for a while. And
is that
then,
Burning Man?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just got to explain it to
you. It's okay.
Listeners.
Sorry. and I've lived in Chicago for a couple of years. I had a few friends there, but I was going to school. And then my husband's first job ended up being in Michigan, in mid-Michigan. And I had no friends, really. I mean, we had a few friends that were from Ann Arbor, but it was still going to be like 45 minutes to an hour away to see anyone. And so when I came here, I definitely wanted to find people that I could do stuff with since I didn't really know anyone. And I went to Tallulah Love, who's my business partner now. She and her business partner at the time, they had Sirens of the South, and they were doing meetups once a month for people who are interested in pinup like culture and burlesque and stuff. And so I got dressed up and showed up one night and Tallulah was just like, who are you? You know, cause I had showed up out of nowhere and it was right before they started classes and the classes were more geared on like how to do costume stuff and, you know, a few basic burlesque things, but it was more business, I think, and more about like, you know, finding your concepts and getting your name and like that kind of thing. And so they called it the ABCs and 1-2-3s of burlesque. And I did their classes. I think it was like almost a year or 6 months, maybe 6 months to a year. They were doing them like every Saturday for like an hour and a half or 2 hours. And I got to meet a lot of the people that are in burlesque now through that. And we all kind of graduated together. And I know the Sirens 10th anniversary is coming up at the end of this month. And it's either this month. Yeah, this month. And no, sorry, September, because I'm out of town the weekend that they were doing it, because Catherine asked me to do it. It's the 16th of September. But that was the 1 year anniversary from their first show. And so that's how I kind of keep track of how long I've been doing it, is what, you know, minus one from the Sirens anniversary show.
Right.
Because Catherine still has Sirens.
Right. But you say you just showed up because you always had an interest.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like the pinup, you know, culture. I liked rockabilly. I was way more rockabilly back then.
Right.
And
the rockabilly movement kind of had a thing there for a minute.
Yeah.
And then kind of, I mean, obviously, clearly there are thousands still involved, but it sort of had a, I don't know, cross culture, like, I guess like this is going way back, but maybe like swingers kind of put it
right. I would say so. I mean, even now there's still, like the electro swing people,
I don't even
they're
know
still, you'll have to ask Tallulah about that. Her husband runs, I guess it's called the Artifice Club. They were doing stuff with steampunk and electro swing, and they do a night every month. It's packed, but so like, there's a lot
steampunk
of
steampunk seems like a lot of work.
I think it's amazing, but I could never do it.
I mean,
it's a lot of handcrafted.
That's what
stuff.
I'm saying.
Yeah. Like burlesque costumes are hard enough for me to do. Like,
I mean, I'm kind of amazed by it. Fascinated, but like, yeah, wow. Those people are like, you're fucking committed. And I know that people who do whatever kind of cosplay can spend thousands of man hours and whatever building stuff. So anyway, but can you just give me the brief description of what electro is? Because I've literally not heard that term.
The way I would describe it is like listening to the music. It's sort of swing, but I feel like it's more 20s, like getting into 20s, like Charleston music. But then it's almost like there's this techno rave aspect to the music.
The name then now makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I love going and seeing all the people. They dress up. I've seen guys in bear coats and straw hats, and like, it's amazing. Like all the people that are really committed to it are pretty cool. And they hire burlesque performers all the time to do stuff.
Because it just sort of fits in.
Yeah, it kind of crosses over.
But do you have to go like that style? Because I think more like 40s, 50s, 60s, even than like 20s, 30s.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've only ever performed for them once and I didn't have to, but we do dance in between our acts. And you kind of, I guess what we all technically call it is go-go dancing, which is just kind of dancing with whatever music is going on in between. Right. But it was all like that. I mean, we were kind of doing all this crazy. I did not know how to dance like that. I just kind of danced around, you know, in all my fringe and stuff. But yeah, it was, I think most of the acts are more geared towards the 20s and 30s.
Right.
When I've seen performers.
So do you remember like, when you first saw it, like as a kid or a teenager or whatever, that you thought like, that seems like a cool thing?
Well, you know, it's funny because I had known about Betty and Tempest Storm and all of that from, I guess, when I was in my 20s and probably before that. But I thought of her more as a model and not so much the burlesque aspect. Because if you watch her do burlesque, she's not the best dancer. I think if you watch, you know, was it Superama or something?
Because she was famous for already just being
the
most famous pinup girl in the world.
Right. And I think if you look at the old videos and stuff like Blaze Star and stuff, she's way better, you know. So even Tempest was a better, you know, burlesque performer. I was in musical theater for a long time. I was in it in high school and then in college and stuff. So I adored Gypsy. Like, I knew who Gypsy Rose Lee was. My grandmother saw like Sally Rand before she before she retired, because she lived in Las Vegas. And so I knew about performers, but I hadn't really seen any neo-burlesque or anything like that until right before I moved here and I started doing research. And the internet kind of opens up your world
right.
with stuff. And I immediately fell in love with Dirty Martini. She was the person that, like, if I watched, I was like, she's the embodiment of burlesque to me,
right.
you know, at the time. But my world wasn't as big as it is now. So like now there's a lot of people that embody that, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and how does your name get bestowed upon you? Do you just get to make it up?
No, we had to make up our own name, and my name was actually different before.
And you're not going to say what it was?
Oh, I mean, it was a hot minute. I think it was like maybe 3 months I had my old name, and it just didn't fit me. I always liked the tongue in cheek thing. I liked the play on words thing. And so I was Crystal Shonda Lear, and I liked the Lear thing because of the rockabilly thing. Like, I love Tracy Lords and Cry Baby. Like, that's kind of the aesthetic and the attitude that I was going for. But I went to one of the meetups, I guess like 2 or 3 months after I had started performing, and I said, I have a name and I'm sitting on it. Nobody can take it. I just want to put it out there. And I said, you know, what do you guys think about Ursula Undress? And Catherine and Tula just were like, yes. I said, I'm not sure. I've already started, you know, I already have, you know, my presence online and stuff like that. But then I guess it was right around Christmas, I performed at an Unknown Henson show and I did a rockabilly number and I walked off stage and Catherine was like, Ursula was just born. You cannot be Crystal anymore. Right, like, that's just it. Not you.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's what stuck.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I think with anything, people want to see something real, right?
Right.
And people can tell when you're faking it, right?
Right.
Whatever it is, like genre of music, you know, comedy, magic, whatever.
Right.
And so if it's clearly coming from you, and like, that's why your friends can go, oh yeah, that's it.
Right.
Just like any like good idea for a company name or whatever, right? It's like, it just sort of like, it finds you kind of a thing.
Right.
So, but if you were just coming to these meetups, how did it become your business?
Well, you know, I was performing kind of, and I was a hobbyist, you know.
Is that the term?
Yeah. Well, for a long time, I felt like I was a hobbyist. I mean, burlesque paid for burlesque. So if I did a gig, that would pay for, to go towards costumes, either making them better or a new one. But the first year that I performed was when I, like within the first year and a half was when I did Viva Las Vegas, competition. And then I got asked to do, New Orleans Burlesque Festival. And that was kind of getting up there, I guess, for burlesque at the time.
Right.
'Cause not everybody was doing that. I mean, Catherine and Tallulah were definitely doing that back then, and Renee LaRue when she lived here, but no one was really going outside of the city to do very much. And then I want to say it was about 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago, that I got an email from someone who had a dance studio asking me if I would want to talk to them about starting a burlesque school. And it was a male that had emailed me. So I was iffy about it at first. And I went and I met with him. And he basically just sort of wanted to be a backer. He didn't want to have anything to do with the business aspect of it. He had the space. He was like, I think there's a call for that here. I think there's enough pole studios here in Atlanta. And I think that, you know, this is a niche that hasn't been really touched. And I said, sure, we can, you know, give it a shot. And I worked with him for about a year. And he just was one of those people, I think, that wanted to put his hand in different things and business wise and sort of more of an entrepreneurial spirit than, you know, actually like getting in and doing work. And so he wanted to shut things down and we went ahead and shut the school down. That was called Studio Burlesque. And, I guess about a week later he called me because he started seeing all the emails of all these women that were really sad that the school was closed.
Right.
And he said, this is really sad. And I was like, yeah, you know, this is, it was a place that we would all hang out there. We would all take each other's classes. We'd hang out and talk. And, you know, it was a lot of therapy for a lot of people because we do talk about body image issues. We talk about sexuality. We talk about like stuff that affects women a lot. And he asked me if I just wanted to take it over. And I said that I did, but I didn't want to have the same name because it had already shut down and I didn't want to have that, you know. So that's when I took over and started the Atlanta School of Burlesque. And we kept it kind of going for a few years. You know, it kind of just felt like we were just paying the bills kind of thing. And we really just needed our own space. And so that's why, I mean, it took us over a year to find this place. And we had a couple other places that we were trying to get into. And, you know, people hear the word burlesque and they either don't know what it is that we do or they're afraid of what we do. Like that we're just, I don't know what they think we're doing in here. The fact that we also do events, you know, at the studios or like, you know, you take burlesque classes, you're going to have a recital, you know, and people are going to have to strip in the space. And I think that that's probably what made it harder. But we have a great landlord here and he totally backs everything that we do. And
I would assume though, with the way this neighborhood is going, they're not like jacking up the rent on you.
No,
that's great.
No, it's, I mean, this is a great place. I think this house was the first house built in East Atlanta.
Yeah.
I think it was like 1910 or something.
I'm in East Atlanta frequently, had no idea it was here. Even when I saw the address, I was like, Metropolitan, I wonder, like, is it by the bank? I'm like, oh, look, here it is.
Right.
And then I found out.
Once you see it, you can't miss it because it's so bright.
Yeah. Right, of course. Well, I mean, I think, can we talk about that a little bit, like the body image stuff?
Sure.
So I'm a dumb, well, I'm not going to say that. I was going to say I'm a dumb guy, but like, like there is sort of a, I'm really going to stumble through this. So okay. Just work with me here.
Spew it out. Go for it.
There is a tendency or sort of historically, let's just say voluptuous.
Right.
Is that like the right way to say it?
Yeah.
I'm really trying to send that sound like a dumb, not skinny women.
Right.
Right. And so obviously that's celebrated.
Well, I think now all body tops are celebrated in burlesque. I mean, just all, you know, sexual orientation, identity, body types. I mean, we've gotten pretty, the burlesque community itself has gotten pretty political as far as, you know, being tolerant of everybody and celebratory of everybody, and intolerant of things that you should be intolerant about, you know? So it's, now, I mean, for a while it did seem like, yes, voluptuous was the more of the thing to do. And there was a lot of, it really depended on what part of the country you were in, you know, cause there were definitely shows that I was in other parts of the country where I was like, oh, I'm the plus sized one here, you know, like where I felt like the token performer. And then there are other places that, you know, somebody will come in and feel like they're the token performer because they're, you know, size two. But now I think it's so, the market's so flooded with everybody. I think now what makes it is the creativity and the ideas and performance value of people that, you know, that are there now because there's so many people involved in burlesque.
And you're not someone that feels like too many is bad?
You know, there are other cities where they have shows 4 and 5 nights a week and the shows aren't, you know, suffering for that. So I don't think that having, you know,
the shows aren't suffering, meaning they're getting audiences or they're
right.
or the quality is still good.
The both.
Okay.
You know, I think that the more shows you have, generally you have to have higher quality if you're going to get butts in the seat, you
right.
know? And so I've been to some places where they don't really have any, they have one but it's the only people that are going to do burlesque. So you don't really have to, you know, try as hard, but you know, here there's a lot of people involved in the community. So if you're going to be in a good show, you have to be good.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have, are there any like warring factions?
No. I started the Burlesque Alliance here a while ago because I like the community aspect
right.
of what we do. I like working with other people. I like collaboration. You know, it's, if there is, I'm not involved in any of it.
If there's drama, you don't know about it?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like any community can go that way, though, no?
Well, sure. Any artistic community or any community in
period,
general.
Period, right? I mean, it's like a, you know, like tribal thing. Like,
right.
Like people, so I'll give you an example. I'm in this obstacle group, right? And we started a local one. And we're all doing it. It's great. And we're like welcoming as hell. And please, here's a Facebook group. It's open.
Right.
Join it. And then you'll see people who post things like, well, I think I'm seeing clicks, you know, evolving. And it's like, yeah, if by click you mean I've known that guy for 5 years and I'm going to walk over to them and hug them when I see them, walk over and introduce yourself to me. But you know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, I mean, and we've had, you know, I have the Candy Box review, and I know that there has been, you know, there are things that people see their own perceptions through their own issues or whatever. And I know that we seemed exclusive for a while. But that was mainly just a financial thing. You know, there were people that had already committed to being in the troupe and were already willing to do all of the rehearsals and stuff like that. And, you know, I believe in people getting paid for the work that they do. So, you know, there were people, we have our way of running things with a production company that is different than in other shows. So, I'm sure that that's the way it looked, but you know, I've still, at this point, I'm like, I still put out calls for shows. And if I can afford to pay people that aren't in my troupe, then, and they have a better number, then yeah, they're going to get in. So I don't, and you know, Tallulah is also, one of the sort of head people in the troupe. She runs the Burlesque Atlanta Society meetings every month, which is an open stage thing. And we do burlesque karaoke here, and I open that up to anybody who wants to come and perform for that, you know. So it's, I like seeing all of the different people, because there are people that I just didn't know until I went to a show and I said, who's that? How long have they been here? They're right. Amazing. I've never seen them before. So, right. Yeah.
So you, when you say like a specific troupe, so like you could get, okay, so somebody calls and says, I want a show put on for whatever.
Right.
Like obviously you put on your own shows, right?
Right.
And
right.
Then someone might call and say, I'm going to do a party or whatever.
We just did that for the human rights campaign.
And they say, so, we want two or three people. What does this cost? Do you make right. recommendations on like what a show, like, you know, like in stand up, it's like opener, you know, middle, headliner. Right. Like, is it like that or?
Well, no, because usually, I mean, we have pretty tight contracts and Rule of Roulette is our person who deals with all of that. She deals with all of our sponsors. She deals with all of our corporate stuff. You know, sometimes, you know, if somebody's going to want something that's sort of like a bespoke show, then that's definitely going to cost more money because we already have our repertoire of the stuff that we can do. So if you want something,
I don't know what bespoke means. I'm sorry.
tailored to whatever it is they're trying to do. so if, you know, if someone, says, well, we really want a show that's all disco, you know, right, or something right. like that, then we would have to come up with new material for that. So that's the kind of thing that usually costs more money than, you know,
right.
stuff that we already have. But usually it's a, hey, we want a show, we need it to be about an hour long, you know? And so then we figure out budgeting. Like, what do we actually need to run a show? Because you don't just need like four girls that can do two numbers each. You need an MC. You need somebody to pick up after, you know, we call them stage kittens or panthers or, you know, hands or whatever, that come and pick up all the stripper droppings that we leave on stage. And then, you know, Rula or, you know, Minnie Mercury, who is also in our troupe, they're professionals, stage managers. So we have people that deal with the tech side of stuff. Cause it's a full show. You know, sometimes we can just go and walk between tables for somebody's, you know, bachelorette party or something.
Right.
But, most of the time when we do stuff like that, it's a larger thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Earlier you said when this guy called you to go into business together.
Oh, yeah.
And you said that was because you've had like not so good experiences with men.
No, it's just, you know, I think it's more that when your job is has to do with, I mean, sexuality is definitely involved in burlesque, right? No, I mean, you can't get around that. And so when you have a man who wants to come and start a business with you based on something that's mostly women's sexuality, there's still that question in the back of your head of why are you wanting to be in this business, right? Do you think that you're getting the hookup with all these women or do you, you know, we're all pretty strong feminists too. And so just making sure that, you know, he was on the up and up, and he was, you know, he was great with me. He was younger than me and we got along pretty well. And, my kids even liked him and stuff whenever he would come over and we would have meetings. But, it was just that first thought, like when a man first contacts us and says, hey, we want you to do this thing. My first thought is why, you know? And it's just, unfortunately, it's just the nature of the beast, I guess.
Did you feel that way about me?
No.
Okay.
No. Well, I mean, I didn't know who you were, but I was still like, well, you know, I don't, you know, it's, I think that it's more mainstream now than it was here 5 years ago.
Right.
You know, so it was different. And he was right. I mean, there should have been a school. I mean, Sirens was already kind of doing it, but they were kind of doing it once a year for about 2 months, like every Saturday for a couple hours. And right. then, you know.
Well, it's interesting that you say that people like wouldn't like want their business. Cause to me, it's like the first thing I think of burlesque is like, oh, it's not strippers. Like that's sort of like what everybody.
Oh, we are like, we're all from the same thing. You know, it's
not nudity, I guess would be the first thing that comes
sure.
to mind.
Well, that's, not here, but you go to New York City and it's a completely different thing. I mean, they're allowed to go full frontal everything.
No
and the
tassels,
clubs there.
No nothing.
Not all the time.
Because to me, that is what defines it, right? To me.
I think intent is what defines it. I think that when you're looking at the difference between being what people think a stripper is today and a stripper in burlesque, is the reason why you're doing it. You know, first of all, strippers that work in strip clubs now, they work way harder in a lot of ways, and it's a job. I mean, it's a job. You're there to make money. You know, burlesque, that's not really what's going to happen. It's more like, I think of it as more of a creative outlet for myself. My intent is not to go out there and take money from mostly men, you know, and create a one-on-one relationship with that person for us, you know, a short period of time or whatever in a business exchange in that way. But there would not be strippers now if it wasn't for burlesque. I mean, that's where it started. You know, it started in vaudeville and the theater, and they used to be sort of like the in between the comedians that were like
right.
really famous.
Right.
And then, you know, it started shifting over time. And, you know, I have a burlesque mom. She's in her 70s. She's performing this year still, and then she's retiring. But, you know, she kind of talked about how what changed between burlesque the way it was and stripping and what it is today is the porn industry.
Right.
Like that's where things started shifting to be about more about sexuality and about money than it was back in the day.
Right.
And she did strip between the 60s and the 80s. So she saw that shift and change over. And it was less about gimmicks. You know, it was less about you being a character that went, you know, and toured, and you were the one who was being asked to perform. There are still feature performers and stuff that do that now, you know, and make a lot of money touring and having managers and all that kind of stuff. But it was just a different thing. She said, you know, I used to perform for men and women all the time, and then it just slowly shifted over to men, you know,
right.
at clubs. Yeah,
right. I mean, the term, it's a pretty judgmental term, but the term that I would go with is tasteful versus not so much. That's kind
of, I don't know. I don't know. I don't put that on there, because I think, I guess I think about it as being the same in a lot of ways. And so, and I know a lot of people who are strippers, and I, you know, when I was in my early 20s, I worked for the Colorado in Houston. I worked in a strip club, and I had friends who did it. And, you know, it was a job. It was a hard job.
Like, you danced, or you something else?
I danced a few times. I had just turned 21.
Right.
And even back then, even when I was like a size 6, they were like, you're too curvy.
Right.
For this. But I worked at the place that like Playboy would come, like Anna Nicole Smith had worked where I was. You weren't allowed to have tattoos. You weren't like any of that stuff.
I don't think she was a size 6.
No, she wasn't. But she was a special consideration, I think. But she also was whenever she first started. I mean, right. They had pictures of her up there, and she was tiny.
I feel like we should have a moment of silence for Anna Nicole.
I know.
Okay. What a bummer, right?
Yeah. She was pretty. She was like, I miss watching the train wreck of a show, but I think she was such a, you know, when you think people who have been on this earth before, I think she was brand new. But I mean, she was beautiful, you know, and I think she had a really sensitive spirit. So,
well, I don't want to like bum this conversation. Well, not just about her, but I do. I think the whole strip club conversation is interesting because So I was someone that once upon a time frequented those.
Right.
And I think youngish men kind of like, it's all good. It's all, but if you're going consistently, the people that go consistently, not right. like the bachelor party once every few years, but like that's where they go like for lunch, like those aren't right. happy people.
Yeah, or and many times they don't have time for commitment, or they are. I don't know. You know, it's like.
And many times the performers aren't either. It's not like a happy. There's the immediate like right. rush, right?
Right,
and then that's over.
Well, the money is very easy to like. That's one of the things that I knew about working in a club was the money's hard to match, especially when you're in your early 20s.
Right. So is yeah. drug dealing, right? There's a lot of right. things that like high risk, big reward. I'm not yeah. judging as bad.
Right.
I'm
right.
just saying like that's, I mean, I just think it's, you know, and we do live in a very like porn is cool kind of a culture.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know. This is the kind of stuff that I mean, think about. It's interesting to me. And like, I have sons, and it's like the day's going to come that my like boy finds porn, and how do we deal with that? And like,
oh yeah, I think about that with my son finding right. out about like my daughter knows what I do now,
right?
You know, and but I worry about her friends at school finding YouTube videos or you know, I think it goes back to teaching that you know just that it's not just women's bodies that are sexual. You know, it's not.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of naked men. They're not too pretty.
Well, that's just your preference. But I think that, well, and I've also seen a lot of burlesque acts that aren't sexual, right? They're hilarious.
Right.
Or they're, you know, or they make you really think about like how you've lived your life. Or, you know, I saw one of my favorite acts I think I'd ever seen was a girl from, was it Athens? She did a number as Jackie O coming home and taking her clothes off after the shooting.
Oh my God.
And, or I guess Jacqueline Kennedy. And it was to Cry to Me. And it was just like heart wrenching. It was beautiful. Her moves were still sexy, like all that, cause she had a chair and all that stuff. But like I still to this day remember that.
Like she
and
had
I
the little pillbox hat, the whole thing.
The pink suit, everything. Wow. And there was blood splattered everywhere and having to wipe it off her face and all that. And it was like, it made you think about that she had to do that, right? Like she had to go home and take those clothes off.
That's hardcore, like, dude.
Yeah. But so I've seen a lot of burlesque that's not sexy at all right. because that's not what it's about. And right. I think that's where it's more of the intent is different. I mean, sure, if you can go into classic burlesque and be sexy and be beautiful and statuesque and all that stuff, and then you can go into the stuff that's more like performance art, and that's really what it's about. It's a social commentary. You know, we had somebody that just graduated that is a plus size woman. She's dealt with her whole life. She's had issues because of it in her whole life, and she had, you know, the words of like ugly and stuff removed and then like beautiful and badass and stuff underneath her clothes. And there were just women in tears in the audience. Like the next night when we did it again, I was like, we should just pass out Kleenex before she comes out. Cause I think almost every woman in the audience had felt that way at some point.
Right.
So, you know, so it's not, that's where I think the intent thing is different, you right. know? Yeah.
When people come and want to learn, like it's a class, right?
Right.
You have good people, you have bad people. Like, do you, I don't know, like where do you draw the line at like if you don't think it's like someone's cut out for it, or do you ever say that, or just like?
Usually they kind of find out themselves because we make them go through a lot of movement classes, and there are people that have like, There are people who have stage presence and who are good at movement, and there are people who they kind of learn by seeing other people, and they'll either just kind of drop after a while. But we're all pretty good about being honest, first of all, and being encouraging. So, you know, sometimes what's the difference between having a good number or a good concept and not is just like really thinking about it all the way through as a story, like you're telling a story on stage. So, and even if it's a classic number, sometimes you can just tell a story with taking your clothes off. You know, maybe what's in your mind is that, you know, I'm just taking my clothes off for this person for the first time or something, you know? But that's where we kind of come in. That's where the mentorship part of what we do comes in. And you kind of see each of the teachers what they're good at. Like I tend to get the people who want to do more serious, sexy stuff, like, or dirty stuff. And then, you know, people who want to do more of like the nerdlesque stuff or funnier or more character driven will go to Lola Le Soleil, you know, or people who really want to get into more bump and grind or serious storytelling stuff will go to Rula. Tallulah is really good at like classic and she was in rockabilly stuff before I even was. So, you know, we kind of have a good mix of people here. Flame Cinders teaches here too. She had her own school in LA. All of her numbers are perfection. Her costume's perfection. Like, you know, she doesn't have a hair out of place, you know, when she's on stage. So it's like, you kind of find who you would want to be your mentor in a situation like this, because then it's easier to say, how do I achieve this? Right. Right. So, but, you know, when it's one thing to go to school and kind of learn things, and it's another thing to be hireable afterwards. And that's one of the things that I always talk about is you have to continue learning. You have to continue growing as a performer. You have to continue coming up with good concepts and reach out whenever you think something's not working or if you're not getting hired. You know, it's not there. I don't think I've always told people, you can always ask me if you've been asked, if you've asked me to be in like four shows and I've said no, you know, what's the deal?
Right.
You know,
and you'll give them feedback.
Yeah.
How are you with like nerves?
I used to be more nervous, and I think that if I'm not at least a little nervous, that I'm probably not going to do a very good job because right. there's not any anything behind it.
So I used to do stand up once upon a time, yeah. and I remember hearing a guy say, like, it lets you know everything's working properly. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would say when it would come on those butterflies. You'd be like, okay, cool, everything's working yeah. like it's supposed to do.
If you feel like you're going to throw up, then I probably couldn't handle that. But yeah, if I don't feel a little bit, and I always have that, you know, I have definite imposter syndrome. So I always have that, you know,
they're going to find out I'm not very good.
Yeah. Or, right. or that I'm not as good as they think I am right. or that somebody has said I am. Or,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, again, I know for me, like, all that shit, and then they say your name and you're on, and it doesn't matter.
No,
right?
Yeah.
So is it the same thing? Like yeah. once you, like the music starts, or once you get your position, whatever you're, then right. it's like, you don't have a choice.
And there are some times that I get off stage and I don't remember what I just did at all.
Right.
Like, because you're just so in it,
in the
I guess.
Zone.
Or yeah, in that zone. And then there are the times that you are completely in your body and completely looking at people's faces. And usually that's if the audience is not very,
right.
like, roaring, I guess.
Like if it's smallish, mean?
Well, no, because we get small audiences here and they're loud. But a lot of people just are so blown away, they don't react at all because they're just taking it all in. But those are the ones that were like, please just make some kind of noise to know that I'm doing a good job up here.
So that's like, it's like feedback. Silence is not effective feedback.
No,
even if their face looks like, wow, that doesn't do enough.
I think unless you're doing something serious where, okay, if you were laughing or hoot and hollering, that's just not right. appropriate for what I'm doing here. But yeah, no, if it's silence, then you're like, are they even paying attention? You know, like there's a woman taking her clothes off up here. But you know, it's like a daytime crowd versus nighttime crowd, I guess, and that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
You do daytime events?
We have. I've only done a couple. Yeah.
That sounds not. It's like nobody wants to play during the day.
Yeah. I mean, I think I did a like even a Harley rally thing at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday. Oh, and I'm like, nobody wants to see somebody strip at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday with children around.
A what thing? You said
it was like a Harley thing. It was like a, yeah.
Harley the motorcycles.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like at a dealership.
Not Harley Quinn.
No. Harley Davidson. And I'm from the family that there is no other Harley but Harley Davidson. Well, you know?
Listen, it's what I'm thinking as well. But again, yeah. I'm trying to.
Right,
like,
that's
people,
true.
People listen. You don't like when that's you said true. The burner thing. It's like not everybody knows what that means.
Yeah, so. Most people think it's just pot smoking,
or I don't know, like a burner phone. Like some people just don't. Yeah. You know what I mean? So yeah. I try to, you know.
That's your job.
Keep people in tune. What else do you think people should know that they don't know about burlesque?
I think that men are involved, and their presence is just as strong as women. I mean, it's not as plentiful as women, but there are some amazing male burlesque performers. We call them boyleskers, that are out there and that tour worldwide. That you know, the history of what we do is just as important to us as, you know, what we do now. I think that they don't realize that it was dead for a while and that the revival happened in 1995, like that it's been that long. And I think most people just assume that the movie Burlesque is what we do. And it's, I mean, that movie was cabaret, you know, just in modern times, it's very different. It's not what we do at all. First of all, we can't afford those costumes and they were amazing. But you know, it's, that's usually what people think Burlesque is when they first come to see us, because that's what the movie was called. Right. I guess, you know, I've had to deal with some, you know, because I have kids and stuff, some of the moms that look at you like I'm going to try to, I guess, seduce their husbands or something like that. I don't know. Like I've dealt with like one neighbor in particular, but, who just didn't approve of what I did. And my whole thing was, then you don't understand what I do. Like, you don't understand how much of what I teach is about, you know, women empowerment, very feminist in all ways.
Can you tell me what that word means? Cause it's a pretty loaded word these days.
Feminism.
Yeah.
It means that I'm equal to, I mean, all people on earth are equal, regardless of whether or not they're male or female.
Right.
That I, you know, women should have the same rights as men, and, you know,
we're just better at some different stuff.
Well, I mean, I think that's an individual thing too. I mean, I have, you know, friends that are better at, you know, math than I am, or, you know, I'm better at, you know, graphic design than other people are. It just, you know, it just depends. I think it's all individualized. And I think that, part of, you know, I think part of the feminist aspect of what it is that we do is talking about, you know, there was a stigma with women and their sexuality for so long where, you know, the boys can sit around and talk about grabbing women in the locker room, right? And then still get elected president. But women, we couldn't talk about our sexuality or talk about being a sexual being at all for the longest time without the stigma of, you know, being a bad woman or, you know, a ruined woman or whatever. And so that's, right. You know, to me, it's like, no, it's no one's ruined. Sex is natural. It's just as natural as eating and drinking.
Can we make one statement clear that I've been in a lot of locker rooms and no man, no man has ever said, you can just grab him by the pussy. It's easy.
So my daughter went and signed herself up for karate right after that.
Really? Like literally?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
My kids call him a big orange baby. They go, look at his face. He's like a big orange baby.
My kids don't like him either. I don't think they quite understand. They just understand what they hear, but
right.
You know, yeah.
But they're, yeah, it's enough.
But I mean, that was enough for my daughter to say, nope, you're not my president. You know, it was enough for her because I guess that's the way she's been raised.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, I think we're good.
Okay.
I think this was awesome.
I feel like it was kind of all over the place.
But that's kind of how
good.
If you ever go back and listen, that's kind of how we...
Okay.
Like, to me, that's like I've had people say, like, will you send me questions in advance? I'm like, what fun would that be? Like,
yeah. Like, I think somebody asked me what my talking points were. I was like, I don't have them.
Right. like for a newspaper or something?
I guess. I mean, it's like, what else are you going to talk about? It's just what I do. It's, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Okay.
Thanks, man.
All right, thanks.
There you go. Another one in the can. Another one in the can. Another great episode for you guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. As always, I appreciate it. You know what I'd love to hear? Who's listening this week? Drop me a note. Would love to hear from you. Just drop me a note on Facebook or at an email, mattbdavis@icloud.com. If you're hearing this the day it went out, just say so. Hey, I'm hearing this on Friday and I'm on the way to work. Or I'm hearing this on Saturday and I'm mowing the lawn, or whatever you're doing, or however you do it. Just drop me a note, let me know. Hit me up on Facebook, Matt B. Davis, or send me an email, mattbdavis@icloud.com. Love you, miss you, mean it. Talk to you soon. I have got to run.